What would you do if someone you loved vanished and you discover the person she's been living with isn't who they said they were? I'm Dominique Baines, host of Expanse, the Nan Up 4.
Is he, you know, a murderer or a
self-styled cult leader?
It's just not knowing the emptiness, really, that just kills you.
This is the bizarre story of the Nan Up 4. Binge all episodes now. Search Expanse on ABC Listen and iView.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Just before we start, this episode contains some strong language.
In the weeks after Jack disappeared, the police search had a kind of stop-start quality to it. To begin with, it was all go, go, go.
The search operation was extended yesterday to include police on foot, motorbikes, police divers, SES, drones and remote area tracking personnel.
Authorities. Then it would just sort of slow down for a bit. That was until the strange clues started appearing. The discovery of Jack's shoes, his hat, the wallet and credit card, they sparked interest. And then the search would kick off again with new energy and the whole community would get involved.
There's definitely residents out there all searching their own properties. Everyone's trying to help where they can.
But then things would die down again until eventually as the weeks turned into months and there were no more signs of Jack or any of his belongings, the searches just kind of petered out.
The police actively won't search anymore. They only search for about a week after they'll find Jack's belongings and then that ceases and then that's it, really. You know, there's a search going on in the background with people, but the actual active search stops.
Jack's parents were having to face the increasing likelihood that Jack was no longer alive. 3 months after he disappears, the festive season rolls around. And even though the official search is over, the family are still at it.
Tell us what you plan to do this Christmas time, Kelly.
Well, we're just searching as usual. Christmas for us will be so different without Jack, so we won't be celebrating Christmas. But we're just searching all the time for him still in that vicinity and outer areas as the days go by, because we believe Jack is lost in the bush. Or if that is not the case, he may have gone on the highway and, you know, gotten in a car. We just don't know what has happened, actually. It's terrible.
I mean, one possibility was he'd just got lost. And somehow, in all of that searching of the bush, the waterways, everyone had just managed to miss his body. But as time went by, his parents became less and less convinced that Jack had just lost his way. And they became more suspicious.
It's a nightmare. I wake up and it's not waking up. It's just, my God, another nightmare. Another day.
The strange pattern of his discarded belongings kept nagging at them and made them feel like there was more to that night. More people who might have seen Jack after he disappeared at Fixed Crossing. But who would he have seen and where would he have gone? And are there any indications that he could have come to harm? This episode, I investigate Jack's life for clues as to what could have gone wrong and who else he might have seen that night at Fixed Crossing. And I look for the people closest to him, including his ex-partner, who's never spoken publicly and in detail about what she knows of Jack's final movements in the week that he disappeared. I'm Rob Bergen, and this is What Became of Jack, the latest season of Unravel. I reckon my best hope of getting answers is to rewind the clock and investigate what happened in the lead-up to the moment he disappeared. But before I even get there, I just need to know more about Jack's background, about what makes him tick as a person.
I'm just going to bring the microphone closer to you. I think the more we can close that gap there, the better.
This is actually the first time I've met Jack's dad, Ross McLennan, face-to-face. On the phone, he can be a bit abrasive. But now that I'm meeting him in person, he's charismatic and has a more calm demeanour about him.
Yeah, if you just pivot it straight towards your mouth here, that's it.
Perfect. It's about 6 months after Jack disappeared. Ross usually lives in Tasmania, but he's been jetting back and forth to Queensland to support Jack's mum, Kelly, and see if he can push this investigation forward.
Well, I might, we'll go back to the start. I'm really interested in, I think, like a lot of people, we're going to have an affection for Jack throughout this. What was it like when Jack came into your life as a baby?
He was actually born on Father's Day, which was an amazing thing. It was such a gift to have this little fellow come into the world on such a wonderful day. And he was my mate. He was my best friend. He was my son. And I miss him terribly.
Ross tells me Jack was an easygoing kid, and he seemed to cope pretty well when Ross and Jack's mum Kelly broke up. Ross says after he and Kelly separated, they tried really hard to put their differences aside and to put Jack first.
People thought we were still together. We were that amicable, Jack's mother and I, but we did it for our son. And it wasn't easy for either of us, but we got there with it, and we still immersed him with love and positivity. We hope we did anyway.
Jack wasn't particularly academic at school, and I've spoken to a few people who say he was more of an outsider. The impression I get is that he had a handful of close mates, but at times he struggled to find his place, and sometimes he acted up to try and fit in. But Ross says when Jack got to high school, he fell in love with fitness, and it gave him a new kind of purpose.
When I introduced Jack to the weights, to the fitness side of things, when he was only about 15, he took on just with both hands, and it went from there. It was just magnificent. The boxing was a huge part of his life. I've got a bag still. It's quite a heavy bag too, but Jack would turn up and he would bounce that thing around. He knew how to hit, and I was just gobsmacked, you know, with all that hip and twist motion coming off the back foot, all that was just very impressive to watch.
As Jack got older, he became fascinated with self-improvement. He spent hours on YouTube watching videos about fitness and wellness.
Whether it be yoga or the dietary side of it or the ice baths, you know, that was a big thing for him for a while, having those ice baths and the benefits of it, the meditation. He was always trying to better himself.
When Jack eventually finished school, he got a job as a personal trainer.
The fitness industry was something he just loved to pieces, but it was very competitive, very competitive.
It wasn't easy to get clients, and the pay wasn't always great.
It wasn't as lucrative as he thought, you know, and even though the passion was there.
Then about 18 months before Jack disappeared, he started a new relationship. The girl's name was Carly, and she used to be in the year below him at high school. Even though Ross lives a fair way away in Tasmania, he kept in regular contact with Jack and his mum, Kelly, over the phone.
Jack's mum said, "Look, Jack's met a girl named Carly," and I went, "Cool." And she said, "Oh, well, I don't particularly get on with a Ross. I find her a little bit shut off." And I said, "Well, Jack sees the good in her. She sees the good in Jack. Let them do their thing."
Ross says Jack started to change after he met Carly.
Jack would ring me after work driving home. You know, we'd just always be on the blower together. And I noticed changes in him, positive changes. He was starting to dress differently. I was looking at his photos and stuff and just thought, oh, wow, he's actually, you know. And it's all part of being in that relationship. I noticed they were going out a lot into Brisbane and doing stuff. He was doing things that she enjoyed. She's into lantern, you know, like Chinese lanterns and things, but he found a craft course where it's a day thing where you make your own, and he did it with her. And she was entertaining his interest. She took him to the V8 supercar track and was able to give him an hour's drive around with a race driver, and they were living life. And I was all for it.
Then around July of 2024, a few months before he vanished, Jack scaled his fitness work right back, and he got a full-time job in construction. It paid better, and it gave him the promise of a more stable career going forward.
He's maturing a lot. I don't think it might have happened if it wasn't for going out with Carly, because she helped set him on the path of that career.
But by the time Jack disappeared just months later, he was 27 years old and he and Carly were no longer together. So what happened? Ross noticed the first real signs of trouble when the couple came to visit him in Tasmania. The trip started out well.
When he came down to Tasmania for the first time, he'd bought his own airfare.
Ross was blown away. He felt like his son had really grown up.
He'd hired his own rental car. I was not involved in any way of paying for it. And I just thought, wow, he's come of age. He's landed on his feet now. And I hugged Carly. I thought she'd just done wonders, you know. I had lots of questions for her just about her family and, you know, and jobs and whatnot. And she was quite a introverted person, and that's all right, you know. But she was pretty much yes and no answers. There wasn't a lot of elaboration. And once again, Jack saw the good in her.
Ross notices some tension between Jack and Carly, but he doesn't think much of it, and he just shakes it off as a normal couple bickering. That's up until the trip is almost over.
They'd had a tiff, and she was going out the door with a suitcase at like 11 o'clock at night. I thought, what?
Jack tells Ross Carly wants to go and stay in a hotel.
I said, she's not going to get one around here at this hour. So he said, oh, Dad, I'll talk her back in, and he did. And they kind of woke up fine, and she was all right in the morning, and they jumped in their car, went to the airport and flew back home.
But things weren't fine, and they hadn't been for a while. I found posts on social media from months before this that showed Jack was looking to move out of the house he shared with Carly. He'd been talking to his workmates about whether he should stay in the relationship, and more than once, he'd gone to his mum's place after an argument with Carly. When Jack and Carly get back to Queensland, they keep arguing. The arguing reaches this kind of ugly climax. Exactly what happens isn't clear, but the police are called. When I heard about the police being called, I was genuinely shocked. I'd been on this story for months and no one had mentioned a thing about it. It felt like this was a significant piece of information. I asked Jack's mum, Kelly, if she could fill me in.
He just said, Carly's called the police on me tonight, and that's it then. You know, he was really embarrassed by that.
Kelly says instead of staying the night at home with Carly, Jack comes back to her house and he opens up about the relationship.
And I said, did it get physical? Did anything happen? Why are the police called? And he said, no. They've had a verbal argument and Carly's called the police. And he left. He wasn't kicked out. He just left. But he said that was enough, that's it now. You know, that's too much.
I'll tell you more about that argument and the cops being called later. But for now, let's stick with Jack and his mum. In this conversation, she says Jack is frank with her about the fact that the relationship is in trouble.
He told me himself that things haven't been real good, Mum. And we've been in separate bedrooms and he said we're just not suited, you know. And he was sounding authentic that I'm getting all my stuff because Carly's working tomorrow. I'm going to go over and get my stuff while she's at work. I just knew that with the police being called, to me, that was enough. That was enough that you shouldn't be having these hard issues in the first year. Should be the fun times because there's going to be harder times ahead when you involve children perhaps and other things. So these should be the glowing days.
One of the most common theories that people come up with to explain Jack's disappearance is that maybe he was in a bad state because of his relationship breakdown, maybe even so low that he was feeling suicidal. I'm told the police also asked questions about his state of mind early on. And I know after some of the breakups I went through in my mid-20s, it can feel like the world's been tipped on its head and it can be hard to make sense of anything. Kelly was one of the last people to speak with Jack. She spoke with him on the phone about 9 p.m. and for her, there were no alarm bells ringing at that time.
He didn't sound depressed, but he sounded a bit upset because, you know, as you would be, but he didn't sound like it's the end of my world. I would have picked up on that.
But a mum sometimes doesn't know everything that's going on in her son's life. That moment when your first major relationship breaks down, it can feel like a moment of free fall where anything can happen. Was he depressed? Was he bitter? If he was feeling angry or wild because of what was going on in his private life, maybe he'd pissed the wrong person off or taken a risk that he wouldn't normally take. I wanted to test this all out with other people who knew Jack well.
I would consider Jack to be a good friend. Like, I trusted him, and I still do trust him.
Trent and Jack had a pretty close relationship, especially considering that Trent was actually his boss as well as his landlord. Trent had taken Jack on as a labourer, and when Jack and Carly were looking for a place to live, Trent offered them a house that he had up for rent.
So the age gap between me and Jack was 10 years, so we're in two completely different stages of our life.
But Trent saw himself in Jack as if they were kind of the same, just years apart in life experience.
So that's why I got along with him quite well.
Trent remembers speaking with Jack after one of the big fights that he had with Carly. It was in the week before Jack disappeared.
It sounded pretty ugly. I don't know the full story. All that Jack said is, yeah, they had a big argument and they were blueing, and, yeah, he didn't really say a lot. All he said, he was just moving out, basically straight away.
How would you describe his mindset the last times that you saw him?
Just normal Jack. They mentioned back in the day, like when I'd done interviews with the police and stuff, like, you know, suicidal part. And I said, no, like the complete opposite. Like, he was nowhere near that sort of stuff. Like, he was just happy. Like, even though, you know, he was at the end of his relationship, you know, he was not sad about it. He was just ready to move on. There was no, you see some people that end a relationship, they think their life's about to end, but he was far from that.
Jack's next movements are crucial to understanding his headspace on the night that he disappeared, and I've spent quite the amount of time trying to piece them together. From what I know, on the last day that Jack was seen, the Friday, he woke up late at his mum's house. He texted with Trent and asked about the possibility of staying the night in the granny flat at Trent's. Then around lunchtime, Jack went to the Mergan police station. When I learnt this, I had a million questions. I mean, on the very day that he disappears, he's gone to the police station? I felt surely this has something to do with his disappearance. But when I spoke to police about it, they wouldn't elaborate, and they just said it was a private matter.